Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by a blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We are here to bring you the information that you need to help you make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Sonia Muto. I'm the Community Program Coordinator for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. Today on the show, I am talking about managing a chronic cancer during a pandemic with Scott Bellerby. Scott is an outpatient hematology nurse at the Tom Baker Cancer Center in Calgary, Alberta. Scott also serves on several committees centered on improving patient care and positive change in the center. Thank you, Scott, for joining us today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and the current role you play in the healthcare system?
Sure. So I have been a registered nurse for about 10 years. I spent most of my time as an oncology nurse in the inpatient setting and in outpatient hematology. I spent a lot of my career in Edmonton. I had also a little short stop in California, and now I'm working in Calgary, as you mentioned. I've been here for about 3 years, and my current role is a hematology outpatient clinic nurse, as you mentioned as well. And my role really starts at diagnosis. We get a lot of new patients that are coming in from communities, whether it's their family doctor or possibly their diagnosis is found incidentally with some routine tests. We will bring them in, have the patient worked up, do imaging, blood tests. We may decide to start some sort of treatment. We may decide to wait. We continue following this patient through. And really, I manage the patient all the way until we can discharge them back into the community, back to their family doctor, which is great.
What are some of the challenges that people with a chronic blood cancer are facing during this time of pandemic?
So the biggest challenge I think that our whole system is facing right now with COVID-19 is that we have to be very adaptable to the changing times. Unfortunately, what that results in is we need to look at some changing care models. When we look at care models, ideally pre-pandemic, we are going to be seeing people in the clinic quite a bit. We're very accessible. You know, you call us up, we can say, yeah, we'll see you, come on in. And the flow of patients in and out of the clinic was a lot more fluid. With COVID-19 and the restrictions on having people come to the hospital, avoiding contact, avoiding public places, we find there's a lot of challenges that we face by managing cancer again from the distance. So there are a few things that come up that we've noticed. First of all, without seeing people in clinic, we often have some challenges with communication, and some of the things we miss out on when we're not seeing people in clinic is that body language and physical communication. So we can be speaking with a patient on the phone and they say, I feel pretty good. I feel great. Everything's all good. But if you bring that same patient into the clinic and they're telling you the same things, you may be able to pick up on some things that they're not quite telling you. If it's maybe they're jaundiced a little bit, or maybe they're not quite as focused or as energetic as they would be normally. So we miss out on some of that extra communication that's subconscious when we do see the patient in clinic. Another part of that is the flow of conversation. When we're doing some of these assessments over the phone or through distance, it doesn't usually flow quite as well as having an in-person conversation with one of your patients. And with that, you need to find different strategies of really getting to the information that you need. Sometimes when you're doing these conversations over the phone, you have a bit of a harder time, whereas in person, you can kind of ask questions here and there as they come up. One of the challenges as well that we have with communicating is trying to direct the the focus of the communication. Sometimes when you're in person, our patients usually, you know that they're in the hospital, they're here for their assessment, and that conversation can be focused. But when we're doing distance assessments, sometimes we need to really focus in on those questions that really matter and make sure that we're getting to the information that we really need. With seeing people from a distance, to some of our patients we see quite often, it could be weekly, it may even be several times a week. We sometimes miss out on that relationship building part of the interaction between a nurse or a healthcare provider and a patient. And that can be really important, trying to understand what are their needs and how can we best help this person, looking at the holistic health of the patient. Now, if we are doing this from a distance, sometimes we can miss out on that personal billing of this relationship. We also have lots of fears and anxiety with people coming into clinic and being possibly exposed to COVID-19, and for people staying at home and possibly avoiding being seen by a doctor. So with this change, it's really important on an individual basis to talk to your patients and see, are you having fears and anxiety by being seen in the hospital and that exposure to COVID-19? Is it possible that you're having anxieties stemming from not being seen by a patient, by the healthcare providers? One of the challenges I found that personally with all my patients is that when we're doing these assessments from distance and over the phone or over Zoom perhaps, often sometimes the symptoms become underreported, and getting a really clear assessment with your patient can be challenging for sure. And we want to make sure that because things are at a distance, that they know that yes, we can manage the problems that you're having, and yes, we are here and we have plans to help you along the way, even if we're not in the same room. As we go through our whole process of having a new patient and carrying on through treatment and then to the end of their treatment, hopefully discharged back home, there are times where we need to have allied health involved, and it could be a dietitian, it could be psychology, could be any number of these allied health people that really help treat the patient holistically. We find that sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to get those people involved with your patients that are at a distance. If we've had times where people will come in, and say, this patient might be having some issues that social work can come help with. Well, we can possibly arrange a social worker just to come down and talk to that patient when they're in clinic. As they're at home, sometimes organizing those referrals are a little bit more difficult for the patient and for the healthcare workers here. I think that one of the biggest things that we need to focus on is managing those stress levels for our patients. Whether that's strictly coming to the hospital or all of the other parts of COVID which are stressful for a patient, and working with a patient to try to manage our stress levels all at once so we can give them the best care.
So obviously during this pandemic, it has been quite challenging for the healthcare professionals. Can you talk a little bit about those challenges?
Absolutely. The number one thing to remember with any healthcare professional is that we are people too. So we're going to have our own fears and our own health concerns about ourselves and our family and friends. That's been, an ongoing stress of all of 2020, just wanting to make sure, what risk am I at being at work? Am I putting my loved ones in danger? So taking those steps to be as safe as possible as a healthcare worker is critical. So that's one of the biggest changes. I think the next one is just keeping up with policy changes. When COVID first started, there were a lot of questions of, is this is this disease going to be coming to Canada? What's the story? How many people are affected? What are the symptoms? What do we do about it? Is there going to be a treatment? All of these unanswered questions kind of leave you a little bit lost in the mix as far as understanding, okay, how are you going to come to work with this plan, and what kind of information do you have? Of course, as we go through week by week, you know, month by month, and sometimes day by day, some of those questions are answered, and then sometimes those answers change. So the challenge for us as healthcare workers is really staying on top of what is the best information we have, and what is our policy. So learning the rules, learning these changes, and then relaying it to your patients in an effective way that they understand, that they feel safe, and that the healthcare team and the patients can go through our care as safely as possible. I can say for sure as well, critical thinking becomes significantly more important. Our assessment skills over the phone and just with that conversation have to be a little bit sharper to pick up on those things, like I mentioned before, those parts of the conversation that you're not always going to be able to have over the phone. The body language, maybe it's the pausing conversation that you have to pick up on where it will lead to another question. That's definitely very important. It's a bit of a change too for us with shifting responsibilities. So on a smaller scale, we might need to do more screening with patients and ask different questions to make sure, yes, you're appropriate to come into clinic, or you know what, maybe we can manage this patient from distance. On a larger scale, certainly there's lots of healthcare workers that have been moved from one area and placed in another area where they need support. So it's quite possible that a healthcare worker that's working in medicine, that might not be their normal home. So that's a huge change in their responsibilities and how they go about their practice day to day. Another one too, that's always a concern for healthcare workers and for nurses is time management. How do you provide the best care and the most care to as many people as possible in your limited time? That's a skill that is drilled into you from day one of nursing school, and I'm sure day one of any other educational program for someone who's going to be in healthcare. It certainly has been stressful trying to manage either the changes or trying to figure out, okay, we need to manage this patient far from home. How can we do this as efficiently and effectively as possible? With all these changes, just like patients, I think stress levels are at an all-time high. You have the stress of obviously managing your patients and doing the best you can for them. You have the isolation of not being able to go out and go for a beer with your buddies whenever you want. You also need to be aware of obviously the risk of COVID and staying as safe as possible. So stress levels are also all-time high for healthcare workers as well.
You mentioned previously that people with a chronic cancer are not consulting as often as they previously were due to isolation. So what are some of the important symptoms or side effects that a person with a chronic blood cancer should watch for, and when should they actually consult their healthcare team?
It's a great question. This answer will certainly differ between each different type of hematology diagnosis or different type of cancer. So first of all, it's important that you talk to your healthcare team and get specifically what the specific symptoms that your team wants you to look out for. And this could be something like profound fatigue, increased bruising, your lymph nodes are getting really big, you're sweating, you might be losing weight, you may be having nausea, you may be having issues with your GI tract, whether it's constipation, whatever. The important thing here is that we need to know what's changing. What are we not seeing? And what are we not picking up on by having you come into clinic and kind of tell us this? I'll get into that a little bit later as well, but it's important that you can effectively relay to us, hey, this is what's been going on. Here are the changes. Here's how I'm feeling. And this is how it's changed from the week before, the month before. For specifically for our hematology, unfortunately for us, a lot of our care is data-driven. And I mean that by our blood work that we can do tells us a lot about where you are on a laboratory level. And we can make a lot of decisions from that. You know, if your counts start falling when they're not supposed to, then yeah, we can monitor that from a distance and then adjust our care as we need. So that's definitely a part of the assessment that's easier to manage from a distance. But definitely make sure that we have you have the contact information for who you need to talk to, and you understand the pathways of getting to reach your healthcare team. It could be calling into your doctor's office and speaking to the receptionist, who will pass it on to your doctor. I know my center uses telephone triage, which works really well for us. But make sure that you're aware how to get in contact with your healthcare team.
So speaking of contacting the healthcare team, how could someone prepare themselves for a virtual or a phone consultation?
Sure. This is a great one. It's a shift in care for some people who've never had a conversation with a doctor on the phone. So sometimes it's a little bit intimidating. I'd say the number one thing is open communication. It's not going to help us, and it's not going to help you if you're not giving us, you know, the best information possible. There's a lot of value in getting the big picture, even though it may be inconvenient for your healthcare team or for you to say. But it's important that getting that back and forth open communication it's the number one reason you're going to have an effective treatment plan. For hematology, please do your blood work. That is the number two thing for us. Got to get that blood work done. Do your tests if you can't, you know, if you need to, other lab tests, whether that's a urine sample you need to do. But specifically, having those lab values really helps paint part of the picture about what's going on with you. And without that, it really makes it difficult for your healthcare team to make the best decision. For the actual call, my advice is set yourself up for success and set your environment up as best you can to really focus in on the conversation. When you're coming into the hospital and we're seeing you in a clinic room, you know this is the clinic room. We understand it's going to be quiet. We're going to be focused on the conversation. Of course, you're going to be able to answer questions and you're going to be in a private place where whatever you say is confidential. If you can, that's the best way to set that up is home as well. If you have an office or you have a room where you can be quiet and you have time where there's, you know, obviously there's going to be challenges with kids, pets, other people floating around the house. But if you can, setting yourself up in an environment where you can really make the intent to have that focused conversation really does help your healthcare team work as efficiently as possible. And there's an added pressure for sure, having that conversation with your healthcare provider where it starts, you know, you answer the phone call and then you're on and then you hang up the phone and you think, oh dang, I forgot to say this, this, and this. So to kind of help with that, we often recommend take a journal, have a list of some of your questions, have a list of your concerns. If you've been feeling, you know, if you've been feeling down, you know, you'll have a bit of a record that you can show us. 1 week ago, I was feeling like this, or at this part of my cycle in my treatment, I was feeling like this. And having a little bit more data that's subjective to you is really going to help us giving us that complete picture about our consultation on the phone.
So in the occasion that someone does have to consult in person, how would someone who is diagnosed with a chronic blood cancer or any blood cancer prepare for an in-person visit during a pandemic?
We definitely will still need to see people in clinic. That is an absolute guarantee. We cannot manage everyone from distance. Now, if you are coming in and it may be a situation where your status has changed, we need to get an in-person assessment, you're coming in for treatment, whatever the case is, your visit may be a little bit different than what you remember previously. At our center as well, we're finding that because this pandemic has started, you know, we started adjusting in February, March, where we said, you know, we'll see, we'll do a phone consult in 3 months. We'll do another phone consult in 3 months. Well, you reach a point where you really should see these people to make sure in person with their blood work and everything to make sure we're getting a complete picture. So that might be another situation where you're coming in. But again, that whole procedure of coming into the clinic has changed a bit. So before you even get there, it might be a good idea to call into the hospital and say, you know, where do I go? Not all of the doors in your facility may be open where they once were. The reason for that is a lot of the entry in and out of these healthcare facilities is controlled now. So there's certain entry points where you will come in and you will have likely a screening. They might take your temperature. They'll ask you some screening questions about where you've been, any symptoms that you've had, your contact with other people, you know, any exposure to COVID-19. And at those doors, it's important that we can kind of get that information. Another thing to remember as well is that if you're having trouble with mobility, it's a good idea to ask from the entry point, how far is it to get to where I need to go? This policy will vary from area to area, but it might be an idea for you to bring a family member to take you in a wheelchair. That might not be available depending on what's happening at that hospital. In that case, I'm sure there would be porters able to take you from A to B if you needed. Be prepared for screening at the door. So that will mean they're going to be asking you all those questions. You need to be honest with your symptoms, of course, any changes in your health. They're gonna ask you to do hand hygiene and likely put on a new mask. And I've seen it 100 times, you know, people will come in and say, well, I just put this mask on outside. And the policy a lot of the time is, well, we need you to have this mask and do hand hygiene here at that point of entry. And then you can go into the hospital and do what you need to do. I will say gloves are a bit of a gray area for some people where, you know, I've seen in the public, people are wearing gloves in the grocery store. And I think the idea behind that is they want to obviously avoid touching things. But the important thing to remember about gloves is you're not preventing your hands from getting dirty. You're just, the gloves are now, if you're wearing gloves, and whether it's in the hospital or if it's in you know, your grocery store, those gloves are now have germs on the outside where they can't be washed. However, your hands can be washed. So I always recommend leave the gloves at home. Instead, participate in the hand hygiene. There are lots of stations throughout the hospital where you'd be able to get some hand sanitizer, give your hands a quick 30-second wash, and go on about your day. When you do get to their clinic, I think the best rule is please have patience. Our processes have definitely changed. There's now a little bit more time in between patients where we need to do really good cleaning of rooms. So some of that clinic flow might be disturbed. And certainly I know the questions of asking, you know, what are your symptoms? Where have you been? Done any traveling? All of those screening questions get a bit redundant, but it's really important that to have a little bit of patience, answer those questions as honestly as you can, just so everyone's on the same page.
So do you think that a person with a chronic blood cancer should avoid going to the grocery store, the drugstore, or anywhere else in public?
This is a tricky question, I'll be honest here. So when we're looking at answering that question or answering, you know, what risk am I of getting COVID? Am I more at risk? Am I less at risk? We're dealing with a bit of ambiguity that as humans, we don't necessarily have a good grasp of. So if I tell you, you're 25% more likely to get COVID than the average person, well, maybe you'll have a little bit of behavior change. Probably won't last very long. Now, if I tell you you're 35%, more likely to get COVID than the average person. That difference is probably not going to make a difference in your behavior at all. So saying, you know, you're this percent or that percent, or it's going to be 1 in 10 or 1 in 100, it's not really valuable information. The important thing is we want you to limit your risks. So limiting your risks include hand hygiene, wearing your mask, certainly avoiding crowds as you can. Now I will say here, the rules about gatherings and having people over, those are changing constantly. So, you know, whatever the rules were yesterday, they may change. Your province may say, well, we've cut down our visit, you know, indoor limit from 25 to 15. Now it's 8. It's important to kind of listen to those and abide by those rules for sure. It is about limiting risk here. Your counts. So if your counts are low as well, you know, your neutrophils are quite low, puts you a little bit more at risk for infection. Now, how much more at risk with COVID-19? That's hard to say. Certainly more at risk than your average person. But to say, yes, you can go to this drugstore, yes, or no, you can't go to the grocery store, it's a bit of a gray area, and there's no real concrete answer I can give other than it's a good idea to start getting these behaviors where you're limiting risk. What I will say is that there are certain grocery stores or labs that have set aside some time for people who are either elderly, immunocompromised, or both, where there are lower traffic times. And if you do need to go to the grocery store or the drugstore, whatever it is, you might be able to call ahead and see if they have some of those times set aside for you. If you have someone available to you, whether it's a family member or a friend or someone in your household that can go do those things, great, maybe they can do it. Obviously, if that's not an option, we still want you to eat. So, you know, do those things as safely as possible.
So how can a person with a chronic blood cancer protect his or herself when their partner is working outside of the home or when their child is going off to school?
This is another question that's similar, where it's a bit tough to answer. Now, if you are at home and one of your close family members tests positive, then yes, it will be important to isolate yourself. You know, it could be maybe staying in a friend's house. It could be having that person stay somewhere else. That's going to be a pretty personal decision for whatever your situation is. Certainly, if someone's having symptoms at the home, testing is the number one way to figure out, is this a common cold? Is this something more serious like COVID? But again, it's kind of a tough question to give you a definite answer of concretely, you know, this is what you should do. So again, we're looking at limiting risks with kids going to school. That is tricky. Some kids are able to do their school from home. You know, that's again limiting risk for that child and for your household, but it's a bit tricky to say, absolutely this, just in that situation. That's a good question though, that where things might change, and ask your healthcare providers about what the best advice is at the time.
So with these uncertain times, many people have been experiencing fear and anxiety. When should they seek help from a professional due to the fear and anxiety?
This is actually a really important topic. With COVID-19, so many emotions are coming up with people, with isolation, with fear, with anxieties. Now the question is, when should you seek help from a professional? I mean, the easy answer for that is, you know, as soon as possible. If you find that you're really struggling with some of the mental aspects of COVID-19 or of managing your care in regards to COVID-19, reach out to someone. Friends and family, of course, they're great. Your your healthcare team will have access to professionals that can really help you get through some of these problems. And it's as we go through, as we kind of progress and remove some of the stigma about mental health, the access to it is getting easier and easier for people. So I would suggest if anyone is thinking out there, you know what, I'm having a real hard time, or I'm really stressed out with X, Y, and Z, reach out to those people, whether that's a counselor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. You can certainly access these people through your healthcare team. And they are excellent at finding ways to help you dismantle problems and look at things through a different side or through a different viewpoint. So I would recommend, again, anytime that you feel like you're stressed and speaking to someone professionally may help, go for it. You'll thank yourself. It is a wonderful service.
That's great advice. Thank you. Do you have any final thoughts or ideas to share with our listeners today?
Yes. When I was kind of putting this together, and Sonia, I know I'd spoken to you before about this, I think one important thing to remember listening to this and going forward is that things are going to change. So anytime that you're going to be going into a situation with COVID-19, it feels like things are changing week to week. Our cases in Alberta are going up right now in a really significant way. We may need to change some of all our policies at our healthcare facilities to help protect people. If those numbers go down, you know, things may change again. So it's important to understand when you're asking your healthcare provider, what are the rules? That might change in the next couple weeks or, in the next month. And we're doing our best to provide care for you with the best information we have. The great thing about healthcare and science is that things do change and they often change for the better. But again, sometimes that change is really quite stressful for people, but we're doing our best, I promise you. And I think that's important to remember that we're doing our best as healthcare providers. Things will change, and ideally things will change for the better sooner rather than later.
Thank you so much, Scott, for taking the time to talk to us today. And thank you so much for all that you do for our blood cancer community.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
If listeners have any questions about managing a chronic blood cancer or need support to navigate your experience, I encourage you to connect with our community services manager in your area. Visit bloodcancers.ca to connect with us. Until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to the Blood Cancer Experience podcast series by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts, so be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. If you have an idea for the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments or suggestions to canadainfo@lls.org. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is dedicated to funding cutting-edge research and supporting people affected by blood cancers. To learn more and access resources including fact sheets, booklets, and webcasts, visit llscanada.org.